Why was life so inequitable, both within North America, where I lived, and between the different countries of the world? Why couldn't we equalize things and make sure everybody had enough, rather than allowing some to have too much? I decided to study social science to look for the answer. In 1968, I moved with my husband and young daughter from Nova Scotia to Montreal to complete my undergraduate studies at McGill University. We moved into a vibrant inner city neighborhood, and shortly after moving there, discovered that a developer had bought up 6 square blocks right in the center of that neighborhood, and that there was a neighborhood group that had formed to protest the redevelopment. The developer planned to tear everything down that was there and rebuild it with high-rise apartments, hotels, office buildings, shopping centers, none of which would be accessible to the local residents in that neighborhood. I decided to study urban and economic sociology at McGill, mainly because I was so intrigued with the questions that came up because of this redevelopment in what seemed to me a socially vibrant neighborhood. There I met Dr. Roger Krohn, who became my teacher and mentor for the next 5 years. In the summer of 1969, I was hired as a student researcher to work with the McGill Urban Studies Summer Program and was assigned to work with Ray Affleck, who was the architect for the developer that was planning to redevelop my neighborhood. Ray Affleck was questioning the morality of his work on this project, of the project. He wanted us, 2 students, to examine every aspect of it, to interview everybody who had any kind of connection to it, which we did, and produced a report with everybody's point of view in it. And at the end of that project, I was left with one question that I didn't have an answer to. The question was, is the old housing that's already there economically viable? The developer claimed that it wasn't, that this old housing couldn't continue to be maintained because nobody could afford to maintain it and it had to be torn down, so therefore what they were doing was the right thing to do. And I spent the next 3 years finding the answer to whether that was true or not. In the process, I earned a master's degree in sociology from McGill, and I co-authored a book with Dr. Roger Krohn and Dr. Berkeley Fleming called The Other Economy, The Internal Logic of Local Rental Housing. In graduate school, Dr. Krohn led me through a self-study course where we examined economy through the lens of social anthropology. We looked at a variety of primitive economic systems and how they were embedded in social structures, customs, and values. In those systems, personal gain was not a motive for economic participation. The motives were all social. People didn't work for pay, and there were no separate economic institutions. These social economic systems were based on redistribution of material goods and reciprocity. Then I read The Great Transformation by Carl Polanyi, and the modern world started to make sense to me. Polanyi explained how global trade and the rise of a merchant class of the 17th and 18th centuries in Europe was related to and coincided with privatization of what had been feudal land, land that was kind of commonly owned and used. But when it became privatized, the peasants who lived on that land and made their living from it were displaced. This created a class of landless laborers to work in the new factories and largely enabled the birth of the industrial age. The lords and the wealthy merchants became landlords, and private land ownership became entrenched in law. The new developing economy, based on markets rather than social values, required a system of private ownership of resources. These resources being natural resources, human labor, and capital, both money and the infrastructure that humans had designed. For this system to function, resources that used to be considered commons or freely available to everyone, the commons had to be expropriated into private hands. And the private rights then protected by an elaborate legal system. Raj Patel, in his 2009 book called The Value of Nothing, stated very succinctly the effect of putting land into private ownership. By turning public land into private property, not only did land become a commodity, but the rural poor were cut off from their only means of survival and forced to sell the only thing they had left, their labor. From the enclosure of the commons were born two new kinds of payment, rent and wages. Things we take for granted now as being just normal and natural. Indigenous peoples everywhere have suffered loss of culture and livelihood by the expropriation of their lands into private ownership. The commons continue to be expropriated. Minerals, clean air, forests, fresh water, seeds, intellectual property, to name a few. In 1776, Adam Smith wrote a book called An Inquiry into the Nature and Causes of the Wealth of Nations. Smith gave a rationale and a justification for the rise and spread of the ideology of private property and capitalism. Capitalism, a system of economic organization where entrepreneurs undertake production and trade in order to realize a personal profit, or to gain more than the cost of their production. Adam Smith claimed that consumers, laborers, and entrepreneurs, or business people, trading competitively in the market in order to maximize their own wealth, or to make a profit, will result in the growth of wealth for everyone in the society. And for some societies, this has occurred. A century later, Karl Marx wrote that profits required someone or something to be exploited. Many of those who work to produce things must receive less than their share of the income in order for some people to receive more. Capitalism is based on exploitation of labor, of land, and of the natural ecology. There must always be new frontiers to exploit in order for the system to continue creating wealth. There's no concept of too much profit, the more the better, and there is no accounting for for social, political, and ecological costs. Capitalism is the only economic system in the history of the world based on a motive of personal gain, or a motive of creating wealth for individuals, regardless of social relationships. Unfortunately, this system is constantly displacing more socially and ecologically integrated economic systems, and more commons are continually being expropriated. Masses of people now have few rights to the natural environment, and many ecological systems are dying. When I discovered in 1970 that greed, both individual and corporate, was the foundation of our capitalist economic system, I felt betrayed. I'd been brought up to believe that Western culture espoused Christianity. Basing an economic system on greed was clearly contrary to the teachings of Christ. How could Christians accept such an immoral economic system? Surely the immorality was visible. Greed and selfishness are immoral in the spiritual teachings of all the great religions. And couldn't we see that this system didn't benefit human society equally or justly? That masses of people in Western society and even whole continents elsewhere were increasingly losing their means to a livelihood. And it isn't only people that suffer. The livelihoods of many other species that inhabit this earth are disappearing at an unprecedented rate. Extinction caused by humans. It might be similar to what's in introductory economics textbooks, but here's my definition of economics. The study and practice of how people provide the material necessities of life, food, warmth, and shelter, which in turn enable the provision of non-material necessities such as security, leisure, time, freedom, and meaning. To meet broad social and environmental objectives, economic study and practice must be integrated with social, political, and ecological systems. But the ideology of capitalism is that creation of material wealth is the goal of economics, and that wealth creation should be greatest for the people who own the means of production. There are other economies. I began to discover them in inner city Montreal. So let's go back there. In 1968, when I moved to Montreal, the land values had been rising very dramatically in the center of the city. The land on which the houses in our neighborhood stood was worth far more than the buildings. And the reason for this was land speculation, because people were coming in and buying up those buildings, knowing that they could sell them at a year later for a profit without doing anything. Because they were doing this, these solid old houses were allowed to deteriorate. I designed my thesis research at McGill to discover whether there was any way that these old houses could actually function economically. I interviewed a lot of property owners, all different types. Some who resided in the neighborhood and maintained one, two, or three adjacent dwelling units, and some who had bought just for speculative purposes. My findings were unequivocal. The absentee owners could not afford to maintain the buildings, because if they did, they would get no financial return on their investment, which was their reason for buying. The owners who lived in the neighborhood and invested their time and their labor and their money to ensure proper maintenance of the buildings, not one of them ever calculated how much money or time it cost them. They didn't keep records. Their reward was a residence to live in, good tenants and neighbors, a pride in well-maintained housing, and a decent living environment. What I found was two very different housing economies operating in the same neighborhood. One dominated by a capital-driven market where the housing had to produce a higher return on the investment than selling the property and just investing the money in financial portfolios. The housing had to pay you more than that for doing nothing except for buying it and reselling. The other economy was a socially integrated economy that produced a viable neighborhood where resident owners never even thought about a return on their invested capital. I had no doubts about which economy was more moral. Jesus would have said, first take care of your neighbors and your community before you think about how much money will be returned to you. The immoral economy in my Montreal neighborhood led to further immoral actions. The Citizens Committee, which we have joined, was also looking for ways to save the neighborhood. In 1970, we formed a housing cooperative with hopes to buy and rehabilitate the old buildings. We were hoping at the time to buy them back from the developer. We registered a society, a nonprofit society. We opened memberships to the residents of the neighborhood, and we held lots of meetings. A taxi driver in the neighborhood joined our core group, came to all the meetings, helped us plan everything. When it came time to have our first official annual general meeting, where we were going to elect our first elected board of directors, hundreds of people that we'd never seen before showed up to the meeting. It was huge. They made nominations from the floor and elected a board of directors that none of us knew. The next day, the Montreal newspapers carried press releases from our new board of directors that were in favor of the demolition and redevelopment of the neighborhood. And we discovered that these hundreds of people that we didn't know had been paid to attend the meeting and to vote for certain people for the board of directors. We also discovered that the taxi driver was a private detective who had been hired by the company to spy on us for several months. At that point, we had no choice but to abandon our subverted organization and form a new one. As soon as we did that, the bogus board of directors laid charges against us in court. These charges never came to any kind of a trial. They got legally delayed constantly, but it made it impossible for our new organization to function. This was my first experience of extreme dishonesty in large corporate business. It was not my last. In 1973, I moved back to Nova Scotia, and for 6 years, I worked for the provincial government in the area of regional planning, doing social background studies. And through this work, I could see that there were other economies operating in agriculture, in forestry, in fisheries. These other socially integrated economies were unrecognized and unacknowledged. And because of that, they were easily undermined by government policies that weren't aware of them, and by interactions with the capital-driven market economy. Things like small farmers who worked very long hours and could hardly get a living wage because the large supermarkets preferred to buy in bulk large quantities of vegetables shipped in from California without having to account at all for the ecological costs of transportation and fossil fuels. We found and still find good farmland in Nova Scotia. We don't have tons of good farmland. We're mostly rocks. Where we do have it, it frequently ends up being subdivided and paved over because the farmers, after having lived so long in subsistence, if they got an opportunity to sell that land for a good price to somebody who wanted to develop it, they took that opportunity. Forests in Nova Scotia were being clear-cut, and sometimes they're replanted, but for pulpwood. Where we have small woodlot owners who invest their time and their capital in trying to maintain the Acadian forest, which is native to this area. The small woodlot owners don't calculate their costs or the return on their investment. They do it for the future. The inshore fishery has always supported local communities. It's been dreadfully undermined by offshore draggers that are owned and operated by big industry. Much of Nova Scotia is being bought up by non-residents because it's beautiful here, especially the coastlines, making it very difficult for locals to own and sometimes even to gain access to the coastal lands in Nova Scotia, and has practically turned many Nova Scotia towns and villages into ghost towns in the winter because the owners of the land are only here in the summer. The social and ecological costs of these transitions went largely unrecognized, as there is no system for accounting them.